Hello and welcome to the Centre for Cities podcast. The Centre for Cities is the first port of call for independent research and policy analysis focusing on UK city economies. For more information on this series or our broader research and events programme, please visit www.centreforcities.org. So a few days after the spending review and the growth statement from Danny Alexander, what are our reflections on what it means for cities? It's Alexandra Jones from Centre for Cities. I've got Andrew Carter here and Ben Harrison. And we were just going to talk about some of our reflections now the dust has settled on what this really means for cities. Thinking about some of the cuts, which I think will be one of the big things that local authorities will be thinking about. Thinking about some of the positive measures on infrastructure and trying to stimulate growth. And then, of course, Heseltine, which is one of the biggest things that we've been looking at and I know other places will be thinking about. On cuts, first of all, not that surprising, really, that it was 10% cuts for local authorities, but I think a really big deal. Ben, your reflections on what it's going to mean for local authorities and for places.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, Alex, not a huge surprise. I think it was relatively well trailed beforehand that local government was going to be one of the big losers in terms of their budgets from this spending review. Clearly, it's going to have significant implications on those authorities trying to find yet further efficiency savings. They've been doing that now for the past 3 years. Some will struggle with that, I would imagine, to find yet more to cut from the back office. And that's going to put ever-increasing pressure on the delivery of frontline services and finding, I think, critically new ways to do that, potentially working with within different kinds of partnerships. From a national perspective, I think the Chancellor, you know, was clear that these cuts are going to, in total, lead to yet more public sector job losses as well. And clearly that's going to have a big impact. It's going to have a big impact in different parts of the country. Those that are particularly reliant on the public sector within their economy are going to feel that, you know, most of all.
Yeah, definitely a much greater impact in some places than others. And I think it kind of moves the discussion on as well to linking some of the conversations we have about economic growth with some of the conversations going on about public service reform and community budgets as well, which weren't really in there as much as I'd hoped, certainly. I don't know but what you think, Andrew.
No, I think that's right. In a sense that, you know, as local government budgets come under pressure, their ability to focus on the medium-term issues and economic issues become all the more difficult when they have to deal with very pressing and very immediate issues around social care and adult care. And I think being able to bring together community budget, public service reform with an economic or growth agenda is really where many of our cities are going to need to get to in the next 12 months or 24 months, I think.
Absolutely. I think thinking about how cities as well can keep some of the savings that they might make. So at the moment, if they reduce their welfare budget by investing themselves and taking innovative measures, then they don't get to keep much of the savings from that. Actually, they go back to Whitehall, and in fact they get penalised, they get less money because they're seen as less needy. Some of the work done by Greater Manchester on troubled families showing that they local partners invest about 67% of the costs associated, but they only get to retain about 20% of the savings made.
Indeed.
I think are really indicative of this.
And we've seen this, I think, when we get into the city deals conversations. Essentially, one of the, you know, the big issues for wave one, the bigger cities, and indeed wave two cities, is actually how can they capture some of the proceeds of growth. The growth that happens requires investment, which requires upfront investment from local authorities, but actually their ability to capture the benefits in jobs or increased corporation tax or reduced welfare, actually a lot of those benefits go back to national government, which prevents local authorities making the investment up front. And that, I think, again, is one of the issues that through city deals and indeed through Heseltine that we're going to need to grasp.
Absolutely. I mean, moving on then, thinking about that to some of the infrastructure announcements. So it was a big feature. Danny Alexander did a separate statement on it. Quite a lot of announcements about the different bits of capital investment in road, in rail. High speed too was obviously a major feature as well. And I think of this government demonstrating how important it sees northern cities and sees that as a kind of big capital spend on them. Your reflections, Ben, on whether that's going to make a big difference to cities?
I mean, it's an interesting one because both a large chunk of the Chancellor's statement, and then obviously, as you say, we had Danny Alexander the day after as well, really was focused on infrastructure investment. it was very difficult to understand immediately exactly what of those announcements were new, what actually represented new monies going into infrastructure. Actually, the truth being, not an awful lot. It was actually much more about providing detail for existing spending plans and trying to identify projects that those funds would be going towards from the 2015 period up to 2020. And I think that was an interesting sort of part of the statement, feature of the statement as well. Given that it was just a one-year spending review statement, actually a lot of the announcements that were included within it take us way beyond 2015 and actually go right up towards the end of the decade. Having said that, so not a lot new within that, I think there were a couple of interesting and positive announcements around affordable housing. We heard about an extra $3 billion to build affordable homes from 2015. Critically alongside that, providing some certainty for affordable housing providers up to 2025 in terms of what the regime's going to look like. And then there was some extra money as well for the Green Investment Bank, about $800 million, as well as some relaxation around borrowing rules for the bank. So you would hope that would see greater activity from the Green Investment Bank being spurred.
I think one of the big challenges facing the government and cities is the how few shovel-ready projects, as the jargon goes, are actually there and available. And I think that's one of the things we're seeing over the next few years. Clearly, they'll want some more jobs coming on, but this was a 2015 to 16 spending review. So I think one of the big questions that's still there is how you make sure some of these projects, which you need to plan now to get going in 2015, how do we get things moving in the meantime?
And you can see the government's announcement on additional infrastructure funding for the enterprise zones, which actually were announced, the enterprise zones, in 2010. But the slow process of preparing these sites, many of these sites, for economic development, for job creation, and requiring quite substantial and fairly lengthy programmes of remediation and make them ready, I think just reminds us that that these things take time and that we need to be continually thinking about these. I think that's why, you know, we've been advocating, amongst others, but we've been advocating thinking about in the short run, but also in the long run, focusing on housing and that provision of new housing in different cities up and down the country, both to give you the short-term stimulus to the economy that we need, but also to provide the long-term conditions in order to support economic growth as and when we get into that recovery period.
Absolutely.
I mean, I would just add that I think, you know, there's clearly a key question now about delivery and actually seeing things happen on the ground. And, you know, it's interesting in a lot of the reactions that we've seen to the announcement, there is an air of frustration from business, from others who've heard similar announcements in the past. These projects that were announced are all reasonably well known about, but actually progress over the first 3 years of this government on actually getting them delivered has been pretty limited.
So I think there's a theme that certainly I identified in the spending review and the growth statement, that a lot of the rhetoric is really good. I mean, we wanted to see investment in infrastructure. That's exactly the right thing. It's good to see that it's there. But some challenges around new money, which is going to be an ongoing challenge. We know there's going to be less and less money into the next parliament. Great to see, for example, science and innovation budgets protected. Mm-hmm. That's really good news.
Yep.
But I think there's a real challenge about the rhetoric and the commitment and the intentions, and actually then the detail of how that gets delivered. Challenges that face both the government, but also the local areas or the partners who need to deliver it. And I think that brings us on nicely to Heseltine, which is one of the major features of this. We were waiting for the announcement on how big the pot would be. We predicted that it would probably be around $2 billion. I don't think any of us were that surprised at the figure, although still a little disappointed, because actually I think the rhetoric and the commitment that the Chancellor has had to this and the Deputy Prime Minister and others to really devolving things and to making the most of Heseltine means that although it's great they've taken this first step, and I think that's really important to say, mm-hmm. it is a big yep. step. $2 billion isn't enormous, and particularly when you look at the detail of some of the funds and what's in it. For example, new homes bonus, some of the transport funds, just over $300 million actually already allocated. So when you look at what's in the pot, there's not necessarily the flexibility that we would have hoped. Mm. Andrew, I know you've been looking at this.
No, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, I think the critical issue alongside was part of the announcement stating that it was $2 billion in 15-16, but then it was a minimum commitment of $2 billion you know, for the following 5 years of the next parliament, making that real, making that something that all parties and all governments, whoever they may be after 15, 16, are committed to, is going to be really important. So the local enterprise partnerships and their partners can plan accordingly, but also, as we've already said, infrastructure investment and much of the Heseltine pot is capital, actually takes a long time to plan and to run out. And in a sense, if you're wary that funding may be changed because policy changes, then that limits by nature the types of investments you're willing or able to make. So that long-term commitment is going to be, I think, one of the critical factors for the government to bottom out over the next 6 or 12 months.
Absolutely, and there's probably some advantages in local enterprise partnerships actually looking now at very specific projects that will be multi-year capital projects, because actually if the government does commit to them now through the single pot or through other measures, and we'll come back to that in a moment, then actually it may be more challenging for a subsequent parliament and whoever the government is post 2015 to unravel some of that, particularly if it delivers jobs and growth. So I think that's really important.
And I would say, you know, 3 years, at least 3 years of a government that at least rhetorically has been committed to localism and devolution, even if the progress has been slow. You know, we hope, and the expectation, rightly, is that cities and their partners are in a better shape to know what's required in their areas and can actually make this happen, probably more so than they were 3 years ago. So there's challenges and opportunities on both sides, I think.
I would agree with that, Andrew, because I think, you know, now clearly it's for cities and their and LEPs and their partners to take this agenda forward and prove that they actually can deliver on it. Is the pot as big as we might have hoped? Well, no, it isn't, not on day one, but it does represent a clear statement of intention, a direction of travel for the future, and now we need to see progress made within individual city areas, within individual LEP areas, to demonstrate that they are capable of administering these kind of funds, of being strategic in their thinking and prioritising investments that are going to drive local growth.
I mean, one of the very strong points made to me when I've been speaking to officials about this is that the pot is just one part of this.
Mm-hmm.
That actually, and what's in the pot, which, you know, much of it is money that was in and around local government anyway, but it's done in a different way, and there's issues about ring fencing and unring fencing, competition and formula allocation, resource spend versus capital spend. So there's all of that, but actually there's structural funds, and thinking about that, and I know that they're thinking about how you can link those two. Then there's the offer, which I think is being made quite genuinely and links to Ben's point, that you need to get a very good local growth plan in place, and actually that shouldn't be just about what's in the pot. So you shouldn't be captured by the pot, you should be thinking about what works for your local area, and then come to government, and there are additional freedoms and flexibilities on offer, which was very clear in the document.
Mm.
So I think there is an onus on local areas to think about what do we really want.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think what we don't want are plans which essentially are ways of describing how the pot will be spent in different localities. I think you're right, it's more than that. It's a plan or it's a strategy that begins to think about all the partners and what they bring, both national and local, and actually how their assets and their income streams can be aligned in order to deal with whether it's skills or whether it's housing or whether it's business support or whether it's transport, and there'll be different mixture of issues in different places, but how, you know, over the medium term those sorts of agendas, those sorts of income streams can be aligned in order to tackle some of the challenges and to realise some of the opportunities that our different cities have and can offer the national economy.
Absolutely. So I think there's a lot of detail that needs to be fleshed out, and I know that guidance is going to be forthcoming before recess about, well, actually, what can you do with the pot, and how can you allocate the spending, and what can you bid for, and what can you spend it on? And I think there are a lot of very valid questions that do need answering, as well as some transparency about how local growth plans are going to be assessed.
Mm.
But I think a real challenge for government, and I think one it's mindful of, but I think we need to keep pushing on, is the tension between being very prescriptive, actually, about what this looks like, and then being open enough, actually, and kind of minimising guidance whilst being transparent, to enable local areas to thrive. And I think one of the big challenges that we'll need to keep coming back to is the difference in capacity in local areas, particularly LEPs, some of which are long established and are now have been long-running partnerships now called LEPs, but have been running for years. Others are much newer. So I think one of the other challenges facing government is not only not to be too prescriptive, but to have sufficient support in place for the more vulnerable LEPs, but then actually let the more successful innovative ones go free. And I think that will be an ongoing challenge for the future. So if we're going to make the most of this pot, it will be about thinking about the different ways that government can let some places just go ahead and other places get the support.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. I think those areas that can take this agenda forward in the short term must be allowed to. Those areas that have got existing partnership arrangements, that have got the capacity locally to push things forward. But those, we must be aware that that's not going to be the case for all parts of the country.
Yeah. And the City Deals process gives us, in some shape or form, a template where essentially those places that are most able, most to take their agenda forward, they've been prioritised and supported, whilst others that have taken a bit longer to bring their partners on to the table and to figure out the real issues they want to focus on, you know, that they're going second and third. And I think that's an entirely appropriate, very pragmatic way to proceed.
And I think finally on that, keeping the urban in the debate.
Indeed.
Because actually cities, we know, because of their size and scale and the opportunities they offer for businesses, can deliver more for economic growth. So if you're thinking from a growth perspective, keeping a city's focus is really important. But I think overall, spending review, the direction and the intention, I think we think is broadly right. I think we would have liked to see a bigger pot and more ambition around devolution. But I think the key thing now is to work with what we've got, because we are where we are, so we need to make the most of that. Also, it's looking beyond the pot, because now I think for the next couple of years, there's some issues around delivery and demonstrating that actually cities and local enterprise partnerships can do this and can do it better and more effectively. It's then thinking, well, what would good look like in 16, 17 and beyond? Because actually I think it's now about setting the agenda for a future parliament beyond this spending review. And one of the things we'll be doing is some work on a city's growth manifesto, really thinking about, well, what would good look like? And then what are some of the policies that would help get us there? So we'll be doing more on that. I'm sure we'll be talking to you, to all of you listening in the future. But in the meantime, thanks, Ben and Andrew, very much.